You're listening to the Gal for All Seasons with the one and only coupon, NDB Media Sports.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's been a while. Welcome to the Gal for All Seasons podcast here on the NDB Media Sports Network and Blog Talk Radio. I'm actually the Gal for All Seasons, Taryn the Coop Cooper. That's the name of my website, galforallseasons.com. And we've got a jam-packed show for tonight. My guest is caught in traffic. He gave me the heads up that he might be a few minutes late, but that's okay. You know, we'll just start the show without him. The show must go on, but I'll bring him on as soon as he dials in. But since my last show, a lot has happened. It's been a few weeks. The baseball regular season has come and gone, and, you know, of course, baseball is my heart and soul. You know, I was caught up in hockey last year, and that's a whole other can of worms. But for the most part, when my team is no longer playing baseball, it's very sad. That being said, you know, there were some happy moments for Mets fans this year, very few and far between in a losing season, but David Wright broke the Mets all-time hits record for the team, and Ari Dickey became the first 20-game winner for the Mets in 22 years. Then, of course, earlier this season, Johan Santana pitched a no-hitter, but we're just talking about in the last few weeks. One of the reasons why I wasn't having the show was because I was attending most of the home games towards the end, and my husband and I are actually out in Chicago and Milwaukee. We actually followed the Mets out there. Talk about torture. You know, we love to torture ourselves following them on the road. In any case, you know, some other totally exciting news in baseball, I mean, stuff that just doesn't happen every day. Miguel Cabrera of the Tigers won the Triple Crown. That's something, you know, it was almost like a unicorn leaping over a rainbow whenever I would hear about the Triple Crown. I didn't know anyone from my generation would ever win one or that I would see one in my lifetime. So, you know, hats off. I'm not as big a fan, but hey, you know what? The Detroit Tigers are okay in my book. I feel like they're the team to beat, and you know, he's certainly a strong MVP candidate for it. You know, his team's in the playoffs, so that's cool. And another interesting little topic, which goes to show that predictions at the beginning of the season are pretty much, you know, poop on the wall. I mean, you just throw it and see what sticks. And I don't think anyone would have said that, number one, that the A's, the Oakland A's, would have won the AL West, and that the Texas Rangers would actually be the wild card. But what was interesting about that story is that the Texas Rangers were in first place in the AL West since April 9th. I mean, just take that in. That's basically the first week of the season right there, okay? And they essentially lost the division yesterday. How insane is that? And my feeling is I don't even think that they really considered the A's to be a threat until that very day. Call me crazy. I don't know. I'm not on the team, so I really shouldn't do that. So now the Rangers are the wild card winners of the AL, and they're playing a one-game playoff with the other surprise of the year. Oh, I shouldn't say the other surprise. There are tons of surprises in baseball this year. The Baltimore Orioles. And the Washington Nationals. Okay, so we've got the whole Beltway there, which I think it's pretty cool. My last show, I actually had one of the Nationals writers on here, and that was really cool to see all that unfold on Twitter, because I consider these people my friends. The Nationals, provided they go past the first round, you know, they're the number one seed in the NL. Can you believe that? They'll essentially have home field advantage if they, you know, make it to the World Series the entire time. Baseball is just grand. In the meantime, my football team sucks. The replacement refs were replaced. And the closest team I'd ever have for winning a championship in my lifetime, the New York Rangers, are locked out because Gary Bettman and crew are sitting around holding their dicks all day. The NHL lockout has... it infiltrated the entire preseason, and now regular season games are being canceled until October 24th, at the very least. this is unreal to me. I mean, these are grown fucking men trying to negotiate. How hard is it? Really? Really? This is their livelihood. They can't come to some kind of agreement. I mean, what exactly are these assholes being paid for? I swear, you know, if it's just, you know, if they're getting paid for holding their dicks all day, well, then, you know, they deserve every penny that they're getting, because that's the case. You know, in New York right now, the Yankees, if you're not a Yankee fan, you're just, you know, you're just bitter. Well, I mean, whatever. I think the whole bitter Mets fan or the bitter non-Yankees fan is a little overblown. But, I mean, let's face it. Every single Yankee fan was in hiding in the last few weeks thinking they weren't going to win the division. Not only did they win the division, they clinched the top seed in the AL. So, you know what? Fuck them. But, you know, at this point, I might as well become a Brooklyn Nets fan or join the fucking Peace Corps or something. Anyway, we've got playoffs and baseball and football to talk about. Oh, my. But it looks like my guest is in the queue right now. But my guest for the evening, of course, is my good friend and my football touchstone, author of the There It Is Jake blog and a friend of mine in real life, Blondie's Jake Stevens. Hey, Jake, you with me?
I sure am. How are you, Coop?
Hey, good to have you on. I hope my rant kept you entertained.
I was very entertained, and unfortunately, I root for the same football team you do, so I have to echo your sentiments. The season's over.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that later on. As we'll tie up, with the football rants, because we should be happy right now. You know, we should be zen. Or I mean, I don't know. With the Mets and their culture of losing, and the playoffs, and the Yankees, I can't take it anymore. I really can't. okay, so you know what? Let's start out with a positive. Yesterday, the Oakland A's, I think, surprised everybody. And they not only made the playoffs this year, but they won the ALS title. And as I said, the Texas Rangers, I think, were the most surprised by it, considering they kind of floated the entire season, being in first place from April 9th up until yesterday. And now they're in the wild card fight of their life against the Baltimore Orioles. But, you know, you actually wrote a piece that, you know, I think really, really speaks to the parity in baseball, and that is how the 2012 Oakland A's are the real, quote-unquote, Moneyball A's. But I have to be honest, I never quite gave them a fair shake till just last week, which I think most of of the AOS might have too. So why don't you explain to the audience your philosophy behind saying that? I actually agree with you, but, explain it in detail.
Well, here's the deal. And this is the way I saw it. Look, let me start from the start. Love Michael Lewis's book, read it shortly after it came out, and then I was all excited about what went on with the market inefficiencies and the whole sabermetrics, because I'm a stats geek. I was playing fantasy baseball when it was called rotisserie baseball back in 1988, the spring of my freshman year at the University of Michigan. So you're talking about somebody who has been completely absorbed in all of this for forever. But having said that, that team, while it was, the book was written about it, that team was a team that had the big three of Zito, Mulder, Hudson. So to say that this was a team that, couldn't compete unless they found all these, no-name guys and blah, 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 that's not really how it happened. And as a matter of fact, they chronicle the picks by Billy Beane as the GM that year, his Moneyball draft. The players that he wanted, like only four of them went on to play in the pros, and the ones on our team that he drafted, actually was able to draft, I think only two or three of them actually have played at the highest level at Major League Baseball. But, of course, it was the story. It was the how they're trying to compete against teams like the Yankees, who take all their players because they're in a smaller market. And I won't get into the rant about how owners can spend whatever they want, so if you're a billionaire, spend the money and stop crying about what market you're in. But this year's team, you look at this year's Oakland team, and first of all, they traded their top two starters from last year, Gio Gonzalez and Trevor Cahill. They traded their closer from last year, Andrew Bailey. They let guys go like Josh Willingham, who was the only player on their offensive roster that had more than 14 home runs or 72 RBIs. Think about that. The only player above 14 or 72 in the home run and RBI categories, they let him go, and he signed as a free agent with Minnesota. They basically said, we're going to rebuild again because that's what we do in Oakland. And lo and behold, everything just started to come together just before the midway point of the season. The end of June, they were 37-42, and they just went nuts the second half of the season. And all these rookie pitchers pitched well, and their two veteran pitchers, one suspended for the drug policy, that would be Bartolo, I eat all drugs, so it doesn't matter how I ingest them, cologne. Brett Anderson, a youngster, but supposed to be one of the better pitchers for them, he's injured. And then you also have Brandon McCarthy, another true veteran pitcher on the staff, who takes a line drive off the bean, right off the gourd. The guy goes to the hospital, could have died, so he obviously isn't pitching anymore. So they're pitching all rookies. They're pitching a lineup of guys who are never has-beens, never was-beens, and here they are. They win the division. Like, this to me is the ultimate money ball, rags to riches. You got to be kidding. This team has actually made it to here, franchise.
Right. And you know, you bring such an interesting point. I'm just going to go back to the book and a decade ago, I remember that team. I remember being enthralled when they were on that winning streak. Just, you know, I was kind of captivated like everyone else. And of course, the Mets were terrible then, so I needed something to distract me. But there's...
Thanks for reminding me.
Anyway, I felt that the movie, and I'm guessing that there was some kind of, you know, copyright like this issue that they didn't talk about the jacket. You know, I don't think I've ever discussed with you as a Mets fan your feelings on Rick Peterson. I happen to love the guy, but of course he's been, you know, very kind to my other podcasts and, you know, being a guest and coming on and talking about pitching coaches and coaching and the art of pitching, which is, I don't know, I think it's pretty fascinating. Call me crazy. But yeah, they had the big three and the movie really didn't touch upon that. But, you know, as we know, pitching does mean a lot. But then they had a lot of luck that they couldn't really spend the money. You know, they had owners who were stingy and they had to make do with what they had. And they were winning without spending a lot of money. So, yeah, I could see that was why it was captivating. But this one really is the rags to riches story. I have to agree with you there. So, I mean, they're a tough team to not root for. I mean, these are kind of the, you know, by your bootstraps kind of team that you want to see do well.
There's a reason not to root for them. There is one compelling reason not to root for them.
Okay.
They wear magic marker yellow uniforms. What is up with those? I expect if I walk in the stadium, I can go, oh, yeah, that's a magic marker. And it's coming off the uniforms because I know I'm going to be able to breathe that in. Ridiculous. But no, of course. Of course they are. I mean, they're the ultimate underdog, and the shame of it is that now they play another tremendous underdog, and I know you were alluding to them, but the Baltimore Orioles, or as my friend Hop loves to call them, his beloved Birds of Baltimore, they have had an equally astounding season, kept waiting for them to fall apart, and instead it was the Yankees who fell apart and almost lost the division. It was the Red Sox who completely fell apart, ending with Bobby V, who we may disagree. I'm not the biggest Bobby V fan in the world, and I thought that was a disaster, but we'll leave that alone for now, I promise. But I just looked at that, and they fell apart, and Toronto, well, they're Toronto. They're just not really good enough yet to really make a mark. And the Tampa Bay Rays were really good, but they had a stretch where they just didn't get it done, and it was too much for them to finish at the end of the regular season. And, I mean, you look at this Orioles team and their starters – they're not great starters, but yet they've been able to do it. And it's sort of like, hey, that's like the Oakland A's. And then their relief staff, their closer and on down, their lights out. And, oh, wait, that's the same thing with Oakland. And then you look and you say, well, the Orioles don't have a ton of 300 hitters. No, but they have guys who can hit the long ball. Adam Jones, Chris Davis, Matt Wieters. And all of a sudden you go, oh, yeah, that's how they're able to stick around in games, even though they just bunch hits and they play the old, you know, Earl Weaver, you know, two bloops and a blast, wait for the three-run homer. And you know what? That's what Oakland has done as well. These teams are like mirror images of each other. I mean, I feel like we should be able to combine the two teams and let them play as one wild card unit against any of the teams that are left. especially because the winner plays against the Yankees. I want them to be able to draft five additional players from the losing team to try and beat the Yankees. Can I get Bud Selig on the phone? Who in America besides Yankee fans wouldn't vote for that, right?
That is so true. I have to, you know what, let's get Bud on the phone right now. I totally agree. I happen to have a soft spot in my heart for the Baltimore Orioles, even if they suck, even if they were sucking. And it has to do with, for one, the Camden Yards, I fell in love with the place. But I also, when you were doing the Rotisserie League, that was kind of my crash course in fantasy baseball and, like, you know, reading the backs of baseball cards and whatnot when I was a kid, because my dad was doing the same thing. But I made him draft a guy by the name of Cal Ripken Jr. Just because I wanted him to. I liked his name, but I started following him then. And my dad and I went to see his last game in 2001, when he retired. So, I love number 8 on the Mets, but number 8 on the Orioles will always have a special place in my heart, along with Tony Gwynn, Mr. Padre, but that's beside the point. But then, the thing with the Orioles was, my story was, last September, my friend and I, on a whim, just decided to go down for a weekday day game, just Orioles, Blue Jays, two non-significant teams. We saw, and there was nobody there. It was like a Thursday afternoon, but they had this spot called Andino at the Movies featuring Robert Andino.
Yes.
And it was comedy at its highest form. They had it, in between innings, and he was telling us to watch The Lion King. He's like, "Oh man, if you haven't seen The Lion King, shame on you." And we're rolling. We're like, "Oh my God, this is comedy gold. How did we not know about this?" So we linked up with some Baltimore fans there, and we're like, "Yo, what's going on here? Has that been like that all season?" And I went, no, it was just the last homestand. We're like, dude, they have to bring this back next year. Well, unfortunately, I didn't get there this year, but lo and behold, the end of the month, we had game 162. Who comes in through the clutch? Robert Andino. Curse mm-hmm. of the Andino, the Red Sox, which leads to, Terry Francona being let go, and they bring Bobby V. Now, I actually love Bobby V on the Mets, but I feel like his time has come and gone. I don't feel like he's really suited to be a baseball manager. I make it sound like his philosophy is a little outdated. It might be. I mean, his philosophies are a little outdated, my way or the highway. You have players, managers, you have guys like Davey Johnson, whose style has kind of transcended different generations. But Bobby V, his style just was not going to be popular in Boston anyway. And they, they really kind of set him up to fail there, him not able to bring in his own coaching staff. And clearly, last year they lost the team. The team just completely lost their focus, the chicken and beer scandal and whatnot. So, I don't know. There were just so many storylines. So, hats off to Baltimore, and, sucks to be Bobby V. I mean, I guess he'll have to go back to Japan.
Let me ask you a question, and this will sound like one of those ridiculous conspiracy theories, but bear with me on this one, Coop.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Sox are under a ton of money, right, that they have to get rid of
mm-hmm.
with contract. Beckett wants out, and he's got big money on his contract. Adrian Gonzalez doesn't seem to like it, and he's got a big contract. And they don't know where they're going to move guys. But their season from last year ended in disaster. They probably are looking and saying, "Oh, wait, Carl Crawford, we probably want to move him too. He's still injured, and we're never really going to get what we want out of these guys, and we're going to be stuck underneath this." What if we hire a manager that we know will absolutely blow the whole thing up because he is combustible? He wants to be the story. This is not the place for the manager to be the story. The players were already angry about another manager being too nice to them. What's going to happen when they have a manager who stands up to them and calls them out on their antics? This whole thing will blow up. We'll give him a 2-year deal to act as though we really want him, but we don't. We know he's going to blow the whole thing to high heaven, and then we're going to come off looking great when we can actually get rid of these huge contracts, because everybody will say, "Well, of course, we have to start over. It's a complete and utter mess." And then we just fire Bobby V anyway, right? Is this not the conspiracy theory to end all conspiracy theories? I mean, Oliver Stone couldn't have thought of this one.
You know what?
I would not put it past them.
I really would not.
It's worked to perfection. They did all of that, and now they get rid of Bobby V, and they'll start with a fresh slate, and they'll start with like $280 million off the books. $250,000 in salary no longer exists, and they can start from scratch again, and the fans will actually be happy about it. How about that?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm with you. I mean, I have a friend, you saw me on Twitter yesterday, my friend Sully, who's been on the show a couple times, and he is as dyed-in-the-wool Red Sox fan as you can imagine. And he's just like, this is such an unlikable team. This season can't – and, I mean, Boston Red Sox fans, they live for that shit.
Yeah,
and,
by the way, speaking of which, your buddy Sully, where's he from originally?
He's from Connecticut, I believe.
Okay, and did he ever work at ESPN and then live out in Seattle for a while?
I don't think so.
Okay, and his first name's not actually Joe, is it?
No, no.
Okay, okay, because I know a different Sully who's the same way and was from there, and your description sounded so perfect, I thought maybe it was him.
Nah, he's a nice Irish boy, Paul Francis Sullivan, and he's been on a couple, if you saw the documentary, blah, 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 the Reverse the Curse of the Bambino. No, Reverse the Curse of the Bambino. It was on HBO a couple years ago.
Yep.
Yeah, he was one of the people on there. So,
gotcha.
So, yeah, he knows his stuff. But yeah, it was ridiculous up in Boston. I mean, you know that they took on all those contracts. They got the splashy Carl Crawford. They did the trade for Aegon to keep up with the Yankees, and then what happens? They all, you know, go busto. And, but you know what? Unlike the Mets, which we're used to, they didn't just sit on them. They didn't just eat the contracts and wait for them to expire. They were constructive about it, but at least they could get rid of them. I mean, Adrian Gonzalez, he's still marketable. Carl Crawford, he's still a guy you want to take a chance on, unlike a Jason Bay.
There's no reason to take him. There's no hope of that him being able to come back from anything. So,
Yeah, I hear you.
Hey, Coop, I know you're excited about the Orioles. I know that you are excited about the A's. I know that you look and say, please, any team but that one in the Bronx. But realistically, as you look at this, I'm curious who you think will win. Because I look at this and I think that the Orioles will beat the Rangers. Excuse me, I think the Rangers will beat the Orioles in the one-game playoff because I think they've got just too much offensive firepower, unless they're just mentally dazed from what just happened, which is possible. And I think that they don't have enough pitching to beat the Yankees, even though I don't think the Yankees are very good. And then I think the Tigers are going to beat Oakland because the Tigers have good pitching, a pretty good bullpen, and they definitely have more offensive firepower. I see the Tigers winning that one unless Max Scherzer is seriously injured, and I think he's going to be okay to pitch. And then I see the Tigers taking out the Yankees to go to the World Series. Do you see that anywhere close to that?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, we have a mutual friend who would be very happy to hear that too. I think Detroit. Of course, I say that now, and like they'll fall apart. Now, I think Detroit is the team to beat all the way to the World Series. I think they're going to be a tough team to beat. You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, they're Scherzer. I think he'll be okay. Verlander, hi.
Hello.
And then you got Miguel Cabrera, who is just unstoppable. He's just an absolute beast. So yeah, I certainly agree with that. I do not see the Yankees going to the World Series. I know that every single fan that was hiding under a rock the past month in shame, thinking they weren't going to go anywhere. I know that, you know, they all came out yesterday, every single fucking one of them. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, people. You know, you were like ready to wear paper bags because they weren't in first place enough. They weren't far enough in first place for them, for their liking. Are you kidding me? So, yeah, okay. But, you know, it's funny that you went into that segue because I did want to talk to you about the Texas Rangers. Now, I mean, to me, the beginning of the season, everybody kind of anointed them as, you know, world beaters. It was like, they're going to be a tough team to beat. They're hungry. You know, even though they lost C.J. Wilson, it really didn't matter. They still had Hamilton. They had Yu Darvish and all that fun stuff. And, you know, I I felt kind of bad for them coming into this season a little bit, just a tiny little bit that I can muster up for millionaires playing a kid's game. But, you know, my close personal friend Nolan Ryan, he is a close personal friend. I've asked him a question. he put a lot of effort into building the Rangers, and, you know, two critical mistakes were in the outfield. You had Nelson Cruz in game six last year, and then Josh Hamilton yesterday. It led to devastating losses. And
yep.
I don't know. I don't think they believe that the A's were a credible threat since yesterday. But, I mean, they have this one-game playoff tonight. And if they lose, is the season a bust for them?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yes. Without any hesitation, I say yes. That team was built to go back to and finally win the World Series. As you mentioned, they gave away last year's World Series. Just hideous. And couldn't happen to a team I despise almost as much as the Yankees, which would be any Tony La Russa-led team. I think it would be an absolute bust. I'm not saying that it's because they're like the Yankees where every season. I'm saying that's what this current team was built for. Having said that, too, Josh Hamilton is leaving that place after this year, unless something bizarre happens. And he's bizarre. Speaking of bizarre, he's a weird dude. He's a weird dude. He's Josh Hamilton. Not just the whole drug thing, but his addictive personality, and then he's coming down with all sorts of maladies you never hear of. A couple of years ago, he said that he couldn't hit during the day because his eyes were blue. That was after a season where he hit over 300 during the day. The next year, of course, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and he doesn't hit at all during the day. Then he's got the issue where he's out for a few games, and he says, I'll tell you why next week, and then he can't figure out why people keep asking him the question, what are you going to be out for? And he finally comes out and says, well, it was because of a problem with tobacco and spitting and dipping and all that. And he said that he's sure that God's unhappy with him. And then he also said that God told him he would hit a home run in the World Series. He just didn't say it would win the World Series. And then he has his issues with his corneas being too dried up because of too much caffeine. You can't make this stuff up. It's almost like he wants to be Manny Ramirez. He's Josh being Manny. I mean, this is he's so weird. And then he talks about when they asked him, you know, will you stay, will you give them the Rangers a hometown discount? And he said, no, you know, because this next contract, we're going to do something really big with the money. But he hasn't said what. You know what, it wouldn't shock me if he started the Church of Hamilton or something bizarre. The guy thinks he talks to God, and I'm not making that up. He believes it.
Right, right.
He's
well,
just,
you know what? Yeah,
he's out there.
It is, but, you know, I've also heard a story about Josh Hamilton, you know, and he does have the addictive personality. I mean, my family, you know, I've seen it firsthand. It's not pretty. I applaud anyone who goes through, you know, the steps and the program and their friend
right.
bill. But I don't really get the idea that he works the steps. And there's like, you know, there's a saying in, you know, the people who are friends of Bill who, you know, you do it for length and not for depth. And
right.
I don't think he's doing it for depth. And he's one of those people, like he's kind of like, I mean, I'm sure, you know the name John Belushi. And he had to have like kind of like a 24-hour bodyguard because he needed to stay away from heroin and cocaine and everything. And it was like the second that the guy was like, you don't need me anymore, he became, like you said, a self-fulfilling prophecy, went back, and then he ended up ODing. And, like, Josh Hamilton apparently needs, like, this 24-hour supervision. He needs, like, his guru. And it's kind of like A-Rod Light. And then you say, you know, the Manny being Manny, like, yeah, maybe he will have, like, a bathroom in the outfield that he's going to, like, disappear to one day in the middle of a game and nobody knows where the hell he is. But, yeah, he is an odd guy. And, you know, he's like a cult hero in Texas. Like, in Texas, he can do no wrong. So he wouldn't last a millisecond in New York. Where's he going to go? Seriously.
Yep.
Where's he going to go that they're going to put up with that and not put him on a pedestal like they do in Texas? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know that he is seriously loopy. He is seriously loopy. But you know what? Hey, if it look, he's a tremendous, obviously we know he's a absolutely tremendous, tremendous talent. But, you know, given what's gone on with him, I don't know. I really don't know. I just look at him and I say, he's too out there for this to work in some of these major – If he goes to New York, I mean, I hear people say, yeah, I'll sign with the Yankees. They will chew him up. If he goes to Boston, they will chew him up and spit out the bones and then ground the bones into sand. I mean, it would be a disaster. Who's paying him all this money? Maybe the Dodgers, where he could fit right in as a, you know, as an oddball, because out here, you know, everybody's an oddball. So I think he would fit just fine out here, but I don't know who's giving him that money that if you're in one of those markets like New York or Boston that you think this is going to work, because look how hard it was for them to handle Manny. And A-Rod's a mess. But those guys at least were – at least they didn't constantly talk about how God was telling them what to do. I think this whole thing will go crazy. New York and Boston aren't the Bible Belt, my good man. They're just not.
Yep, that's true. Well, how long do you have? Do you have another 15 minutes?
Yes, we do. Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. So, you know, overall, what do you think of the new playoff process?
I think that it worked this year in adding excitement. I don't think it'll work every year. I think it is kind of rough on that first wild card team if you're way ahead. And, again, it wasn't necessarily this year, but let's suppose, like, well, a little bit. You're the Atlanta Braves, and you finish with a much better record than any of the other teams are going to end up as number two in the wild card, which was the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you have to now play them in one game, and it's going to ruin your rotation for the next round. Yeah, it's not ideal, but sure, it was nice to add some reason to go watch the end of the regular season, which also makes me laugh because I know somebody that we – you know Big Smitty, right, from Blondies?
Yes,
I do. You know Big Smitty, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big Smitty said it, you know, all this stuff that's gone down proves that Bud Selig is a great commissioner. And I thought, yeah, he's great for lining the owner's pockets, but this was serendipitous with the way the last two seasons went. It won't always work this way with the wild cards and with this now second wild card. It just happened to work out super that way. But I don't think it'll always work that way. I think eventually some team will get shafted, but they could fix that by declaring that the division winners get four of the five home games. You know, if you get one home game if you're the road team, right? If you're the wild card team. This is very simple. You get one home game. The other team gets two at home. You get one on the road. So if you sweep them in three, you deserve it. Otherwise, you go back to their place and you play two more if it goes five games. And then I would be absolutely thrilled to have that. But I don't think they're going to do that. So some teams will get, you know, they'll get screwed by it. But it is what it is. And frankly, if you've gone all season and you haven't won your division, do you really have that much of a legitimate gripe? I don't think so. I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I'm not crying for them.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, do I like the extra excitement for some of these games? Sure. Did it give a reason to watch yesterday's games? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine before about just the setup of it. And, you know, I kind of like the second wild card. And like you said, it actually worked and it did provide a little excitement. But then, you know, last year we had game 162 where everybody watched every single one of those games. I mean, Yankee fans were rooting against their own team. And it was – and, you know, the Braves collapsed too, which, you know, is kind of funny since we're Mets fans and that is always enjoyable. But – you know, and people were afraid that that kind of suspense element wasn't going to be around, and then it ended up that it was this year. But, you know, I feel like, I don't know, if, you know, the team with the best record, if there was some way, and I said this before, like, of course my way of thinking would have really helped the Yankees this year, so fuck them. I'm kind of glad that it's not this way. But, you know, if there was a way that, you know, that the number one seed could essentially get a bye and have, like, the wild cards duke it out with the other division winners, you know, with the lesser records, I think that might have been a little more equitable and then see, you know, the championship series.
Right.
If that makes sense. So, you know,
yeah.
I think that there you know, there could be different ways of looking at it. I'm not really – I mean, we'll see how it goes tonight, but I'm with you. I don't know how it's going to work in, you know, upcoming years. It's, you know, it'll be interesting. But like you said, it's like Bud Selig, a good commissioner. No, he's not.
No.
So, all right. So, you know, we're both Mets fans. Let's talk Mets. You know, I vote, I know, right? What do we have to look forward to? Absolutely nothing. You know, yesterday I have to say my friend Steve Keen, he's the owner of CranePoolSociety.com. I tried to get him on tonight, but he couldn't make the time work, so that was unfortunate. He's a really funny dude, but he had it out with Justin Turner yesterday on Twitter.
Yeah, what happened? What happened?
Well, you know, basically JT comes on and he's like, "Yeah, Mets fans, great season. See you in spring training 2013." To which Steve responded something to the effect of, you know, why is a bench player, utility player, excited about how the Mets did this year, and why do you expect to be on the team in spring training?
Wow, that's
And it was like, you know, it was like a facetious question, but Turner responded and, you know, said something to the effect of like, "Oh, haters going to hate," or, "You know, we had fun this year." He's like, "Oh, what, we had a no-hitter, Ari Dickey won 20 games, David Wright broke the hits record," which, again, is what a lot of people, I think, are leaning on as being positives of the season. But the fact is they still had a losing season. They finished in fourth fucking place. And, you know, Steve's philosophy, because we had a podcast Tuesday night, he and I are on the Kiner's Corner podcast as well, that, you know, there's this culture of losing that's being acceptable. And it's being accepted by the players, too. Now, on one hand, it's like, well, you know, what's JT going to say? "Oh, yeah, we fucking blew this year, and well, I'm not expecting to be on this shit show of a team." But, you know, it does raise the question, why are these players just expecting to be on the team next year?
Okay, well, they have to have somebody on the team, right? I mean, the rules are they have to have a full roster. I believe that's in the collective bargaining agreement. So there's going to have to be some of these guys who are actually playing. Having said that, you know, Justin Turner is a nice bench player, and I kind of like him. And I don't know, it's hard to always tell tone when somebody asks something and then the response. And, you know, he's probably annoyed, too, about how much playing time he got as the season wore on and how they, you know, unfortunately kind of met expectations for a lot of people, even though it didn't start out that way. So I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a tough thing to look at and say that this is, you know, this should be handled. Having said that, you know, there's a lot of guys who can go. I mean, your buddy and his butt, Scott Hairston, will, I'm guessing, come back because, frankly, they need right-handed pop in the lineup. You've got your whole infield that will come back. I'd be shocked if they don't sign Wright and Dickey to long-term deals. I think it'd be foolish. They'll empty out the fan base. Diehards will say, "You know what, I've had enough." So I can't believe that that won't happen, right? So then we're looking at the fact of you've got a situation where they need outfield help. That's clearly the biggest issue. Because if you look at the starting rotation, who knows if Santana comes back, right? But let's assume they sign Dickey and Nice comes back and Harvey returns and maybe Dylan G is back, and then you look at some of the other guys who might be close, and Mejia and Familia and these other guys who got a little taste this year. They're probably in the race for that fifth spot in the rotation. Maybe Wheeler, you know, gets called up, the prospect that they got for Beltran. So your starting staff is pretty good. Despite everybody's, you know, "This bullpen is the worst thing ever created," and blah, 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 as you and I have talked, bullpens are notoriously fickle. What you want one year and get one year doesn't turn out to produce what you wanted. But the second half of the season, especially after July, and I know you can say, well, the pressure was off, but still, these guys are battling for their jobs. The Mets bullpen was pretty darn good. I'd love to see the numbers for August and September. I bet you they're really good. The team did a great job. Bobby Parnell stepped up. Yeah, Josh Edgen gave up some big home runs, some big knocks, but he also pitched well in spots. Carson pitched pretty well. I know I'm missing somebody, but there were a number of guys who were brought up who pitched okay and who did a nice job filling some roles. They'll add some guys. But again, that's a crapshoot every year unless you're Mariano Rivera. It's just a fact. And so who knows what will happen with that, but you're going to wait on it and find out. You look at this team and you say offensively, if you add a big power bat, right-handed power bat or two to this lineup, or a right-handed or a left-handed bat in the outfield, a thumper, your team will score a lot more runs. They'll have a big presence. Imagine if Jason Bay was really the Jason Bay of old. Wouldn't you think that the lineup was pretty legit because Tejada gets on base, Murphy hits, Davis clubs the ball. Wright's a pretty good hitter with some pop. If you now have two more guys in that lineup that are hitting the ball with considerable power, all of a sudden your lineup's pretty good, and you're not worrying about the fact that your catcher's not a hitter. And granted, they still need a catcher no matter what. But I'm just saying, you don't worry about that. And all of a sudden your lineup is pretty darn good because your infield is a pretty darn good hitting lineup. And the easiest spot to find players is the outfield. It's the place where all hitters go if they're not in the American League and don't really have a position. So why can't they do that? I've said this. I've been saying it all year. If the Mets add a power-hitting outfielder or two, especially if they get a right-handed hitter, the Mets will challenge and win a wild card. It may be number two, but they'll win a wild card next year. I really believe that.
Okay. Well, you know, but I do agree on the bullpen. I think, you know, it's a lot of post-traumatic Mets disorder that comes into play whenever somebody in the bullpen comes in. And I think the name you were thinking of was it Rauch? Was it John Rauch?
No, and he'll definitely be gone. He's gone.
You think?
Because
he was one
gone.
Of the most effective relievers out of the bullpen in stretch.
For a while, until he fell apart. And Bird Ack will be back to be another lefty. I know there's somebody that I'm missing, but I can't. Oh, and you know what? If Francisco comes back and he's healthy, there's at least another power arm in the bullpen. So, you know, and he didn't pitch terribly this year in save situations. He just pitched terribly in every other situation, it seemed like. But, I mean, it wasn't nearly as bad as what it was at the start of the season. It was a serviceable bullpen by the end of the year. But by then, it obviously didn't much matter because the offense could no longer hit the baseball and stop getting all those two-out hits. So, but I have much positivity and very much optimism. I'm very optimistic for the Mets for next year. I really believe it. And no, I'm not on any major medication. I don't want to say I'm not on medication, but no major medication. And I haven't been stealing from Bartolo Colon's stash or anybody else that's been suspended recently. So.
All right. I can't believe we have about 3 minutes left. We can go over if we need to, but all right. You know, switching gears here. The Mets are done. The Jets are also done. You know,
yes.
Technically they have games to play, but
they're done.
You know, we've got Darrell Rivas, torn ACL, Santonio Holmes out for the season. But we still have Mark Sanchez. Oh no, just shoot me.
Well,
what
you know what?
The fuck, man? What's up with our football team?
This is all on Tannenbaum. I agree this wholeheartedly. This team was in the AFC Championship game in 2009 and 2010, and what did they do? They dismantled the offensive line. They brought in a complete malcontent to divide the locker room. That would be Santonio. I'll just drop the football because I don't care because my foot got hurt, Holmes. And they've torn apart that whole team in the areas that were necessary, and they haven't added anything. They haven't drafted for the offensive line. They drafted a guy who was notorious for taking plays off. That would be Mr. Copels. They drafted him as one of the guys that they're going to count on the defensive line. They still have no pass rush. Darrell Rivas can't cover everybody even when he's healthy. This team, it's unbelievable how the Jets do this. They look like they're on the cusp of being a good team for a while, and they completely destroy it in the span of less than 2 years. It's mind-boggling, and it's frustrating, and, I mean, gosh, you know, when I watch Mark Sanchez, it makes me almost, you're going to love this one, it makes me almost wish for Richard Todd or Ken O'Brien back there. I mean, good Lord. It makes me wish that Vinny Testaverde and is still colorblind and can still play. I mean, I don't know.
Oh. I mean, I remember back in the day when we were all so excited about Pennington and he couldn't stay healthy.
I would still take him over Sanchez.
I was saying, like, Mark Sanchez, his gift is that he can stay healthy. Whoop-de-doo, he can't throw the fucking ball.
Yeah. Yeah, and, he's got a strong arm and no clue. Fire away.
And then there's Tim Tebow. Tim fucking Tebow. Like, he's got nothing to do with the team. What exactly is his role? They can't figure it out. You just did it to make headlines. I still don't understand the move. I know my cousin has been a Denver Broncos fan since, like, he was, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper.
Right.
And he is not happy about that. He's still pissed off, you know, about the I call him the Milwaukee sausage race lookalike, Peyton Manning. He looks like a Milwaukee racy sausage.
Hey, speaking of which, did you see the huge news out of D.C. yesterday? Did you see that the Teddy Roosevelt racer finally won in the president's race after like 500 and some odd races? So
right there
as a Jets fan, that gives me hope that someday the Jets could actually get to the Super Bowl and win it in our lifetime, because none of us or most of us weren't old enough when they won in 69. So that gives me hope. That's what I look at and I say, yes, this could happen. And if you believe that, I got some beachfront property to sell you in Alaska, which actually
yes.
is. But anyway, no, I just, just unbelievable. Just unbelievable what they've done with this team. And I laugh that I read the suggestion. And I thought this was brilliant. Somebody said they ought to put Tebow in on first down and run the Tebow cat on first down, because maybe they should call it that. Run the Tebow cat on first down, and they'll probably pick up 4 or 5 yards. And then there's manageable second and third downs. Whereas right now, with Sanchez under center, if he throws the ball, it's second and long. And if they run the ball, it's second and long. And I thought it was brilliant. Play Tebow on first down, then bring Sanchez in. Best suggestion I've heard all season for the Jets. But they're hideous. They're a bad defense that will be on the field even more now. But I will say, and I know this is terrible to say, I was absolutely giddy when I heard that Holmes was out for the season. I was giddy.
Oh.
I was thrilled. I want him done and gone. Get rid of him. He kills that team. And in football, chemistry matters. Because if you're not on the same page, you're not pulling the same way, it's a problem in football. Doesn't matter nearly as much in basketball. Really doesn't matter almost at all in baseball. You can root for your teammate all you want. If you can't hit a curveball, you ain't helping them hit a curveball. But in football, you can block harder, or you could run more precise patterns, or you could block a little better, or you could just, you know, make sure you're throwing the ball in the right places. You can do a lot more things if you care about your teammates in this sport. So, man, goodbye. Yo, Holmes, don't let the door hit you on the way out. I can't stand that guy.
Yeah, well, you know, if you want to hear some other torture, I'll wrap it up in just a second. Ed's birthday is right after I run the marathon. And he's having a significant birthday. He's going to be the big 4-0 this year. And he's a Seattle Seahawks fan. Well, guess who's playing Seattle the weekend after he turns 40? The New York Jets.
Oh, he's going to get a present.
I'm flying out to Seattle to see them play the Jets.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but,
Seattle?
It's awesome for him. Like, I'm kind of excited. Like, you know, the whole 12th fan thing, like, really, you know, takes off there. It's a whole different atmosphere. Like, I'm kind of curious to see the atmosphere there because it looks pretty wild. And I've never been to Seattle. But,
oh, you're
going to
love it. Great city.
You know, and Ed's
city.
Like, Ed's always like, well, you know, I know that, you know, you probably want to see the Jets win. Of course I want to see them win. But, you know, I'm like, you know, if they're going to lose a game that I'm going to be at, it might as well be this one. But, you know, I'll probably, you know, be careful what you wish for. Because I don't know if they're going to win for the rest of the season.
And there's no way they're winning in that place. The Jets will have about 200 false starts, 86 holding penalties. They'll end up giving up. Marshawn Lynch will have, like, 12 touchdowns where 4 guys fall off of them because they're just trying to shoulder him down, and he just doesn't stop because he's the beast. No, it's going to be a great day for Ed. Studious Metzimus will be happiest boyus on that dais. I'll tell you that right now. He's going to absolutely love it. And you will love Seattle. Great, great, great city. Love going to Seattle. Love it.
No, I've never been there, so I'm actually very excited to check it out. All right, well, let's wrap it up here. Where can we find you, Jake?
You can find me at thereitisjake.com is my website. Started blogging again recently. Monday, my cheers and booze column, and then random columns during the week. You can also follow me on Twitter at thereitisjake. And, of course, whenever you do that, just look for Coop's Notes on Twitter, because I'm often involved there, whether you're quoting me, making fun of me, or just questioning my sanity. It's always good. And, Coop, I love being on this podcast. It is absolutely a thrill for me every week we do it.
All right, great. Well, I can't wait. You're always welcome, and you know, hopefully I won't have to cancel at the last minute next week either. I don't think I will. I'm trying to think now. I'm like, oh crap, do I have something to do next Wednesday? Hope not.
Yes, you have to do your podcast.
You know, we're recording today, so it's all good. But again, thank you. It's the pleasure is all mine. You're such a great guest, and thank you again.
And let me just say, let's go, insert team playing Yankees, clap, 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 clap. Let's go, insert team playing Yankees, clap, 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 clap. I'm so excited for the baseball playoffs. Starting tomorrow night, let's go. I don't know who I'm rooting for out of those two teams. But you know what? Actually, can we just have both the Orioles and the Rangers advance and have both the Cardinals and the Braves sent home? That would work for me.
You know what? I'm with you.
Call Bud again. Put Bud back on the line.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna bother with the Cardinals and Braves game. I just can't deal with that.
I will root for the earth to open up and swallow both teams.
Yes, I am too.
Well, you know, I know I'm killing you here, Coop, but that did happen the last time both the A's and the Giants made it to the World Series of the Earth, unfortunately,
true.
Did open up and swallow. So let's just have it start early by swallowing the Braves and the Cardinals, and we'll throw Tony La Russa in there at the same time.
Yes. Well, you know, too bad the Rat Hat is retired now. And I saw him, I think he was on MLB Network yesterday, and I'm like, ugh. Like I kind of reacted when Bluto sees Flounder's face in the Delta house.
And throws
like,
everything at the screen, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was me when I see La Russa. I'm like, you have to prepare me. You have to prepare me to see his ugly mug. Really? No. All right. Well, thank you, Jake. Great guest, as always.
We will talk next week.
Yes, we will. And I'm sure we'll be on Twitter Sunday.
J-E-T-S. Just end the season.
Yes. Just end the season. Don't torture us anymore.
Take care, Coop.
All right. Thanks, man. Bye.
You bet. Bye-bye.
And that was Blondie's Jake Stevens. Follow him at There It Is Jake on Twitter, and thereitisjake.com is his website. We're out of time. This is the Gal for All Seasons podcast. I'm Taryn the Coop Cooper. You're listening to me on the NDB Media Sports Channel on Blog Talk Radio. I'm out of here. I usually air Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. This week got a little wonky because of the baseball playoffs, so we decided to have the show tonight. You can follow me on Twitter at Coops22, COOPZ22. My website is galforallseasons.com. And I am a month away from running the New York City Marathon. And you can donate to the Tug McGraw Foundation, the charity that I have chosen to represent, at bit.ly/thecoopfundraiser, spelled just like it sounds, one word. Thanks, everyone, and have a pleasant evening.